From the University of Oregon's Agora Journalism Center, this is the Listener's Podcast. Welcome back to Oregon Speaks, Voices from This Moment, a special season of the Listener's Podcast produced by the graduate students at the University of Oregon. I'm Andrew Devigel, the director of the Agora Journalism Center and a professor at U of O's School of Journalism and Communication. In this season, we're exploring how Oregonians are navigating this moment of transition through stories of uncertainty, mutual aid, resilience, and care. Let's listen in.
Hi, everyone. My name is Christina Path.
And I'm Leif Olson with the University of Oregon.
We decided to do something a little different for this episode. We went out of the studio and into the community, a small rural town an hour and a half away from Portland.
Yeah, this is my hometown, Monmouth, Oregon. I graduated from the high school there, Central High School, in 2014, and we traveled back down there to talk to Amanda Laister. She was my high school Spanish teacher. And just as a side note, her Twitter bio says that she's the fastest talking teacher this side of the Mississippi. So I thought that was kind of fun.
Yeah, Amanda was super warm, and it was great to hear what it was like on the ground level of such a small community. And these communities are really the front line of who votes red in Oregon. So it was very interesting to hear about what's going on at the school level.
Totally. To have conversations like this, it's so important, especially to hear it from someone who's on the ground, actually talking to students day in and day out. You can actually take the pulse of a community.
Yeah, and I know for me, living in a semi-big city like Portland, you can kind of forget the whole world outside your bubble. So it was touching to talk to someone who's trying to teach kids that it's okay to be Latino in Oregon, it's okay to speak Spanish, and you are welcome here. It's not really a narrative that you hear.
Yeah, you're totally right. This really isn't a narrative you hear, but there is so much hope. You might not see it in the bigger cities because, of course, they're bigger, so there's more to miss, but in the small towns, the work that you do makes an outsized impact because the community is so small. So it's pretty cool to see.
All right. Should we get into it?
Let's do it.
My name is Amanda Laister. That's 2025 in Monmouth, Oregon.
Amanda's story begins with a simple desire to travel. But as you'll hear, that early experience in Mexico planted the seeds of something bigger, her passion for language, identity, and community.
So I'm in my 23rd year of teaching high school Spanish. The Spanish teacher at my middle school took a trip every year to Mexico. And when we were in sixth grade, the elementary schools that fed into my middle school were all like, okay, Spanish is, you know, an elective you can take. Oh, and by the way, we're all told Miss Shirley takes a trip. So I was like, I want to go to a tropical beach. I'm from Oregon. I want to see palm trees. And I'd never been anywhere outside of Oregon and California. So I never left the country. So I was super excited about traveling. And that trip opened my eyes. I had no idea how sheltered I was. Like a lot of times, sometimes we find out in college how sheltered we are, or after we graduate high school, we do the military or something. You're like, oh man, this was my little bubble. I started to learn that after middle school because of that trip to Mexico. And then I just took it because I enjoyed it. I had no plans to teach it. And then in college, education was my major. And then I went, oh, it's too generic. I'm not doing that. So I switched it to Spanish. And that was after living in Mexico for 6 months when I was a preschool teacher. It was fascinating. But I learned a lot as a sheltered Salem girl. And I came back and went, my major is going to be Spanish. And then I was going to do bilingual elementary education. So then I went back and got my master's and did the necessary testing to show my Spanish was good enough to walk into the classroom.
Amanda didn't set out to become a Spanish teacher, but life, and 6 months in Mexico, had other plans for her. Now, decades later, she's more than just a language instructor. She's a fixture in the Monmouth community, and her classroom is where culture, language, and belonging come to life.
My role in the community, I'm seen as like the Spanish teacher and, you know, Miss Laister, just like you know me. Except now I'm an auntie and I have a 10-year-old niece, and that's exciting. My comparison would be coming from Salem. So coming out here, I didn't know anything about the community. And I find that, especially when I talk to other teachers, but also in my personal experience, I hear that our students at Central High School are very friendly. You have kids coming in that are really behind for a variety of reasons, not necessarily special education, but behind. And then you have kids that are really advanced and ready and wanting to be pushed. In our school district, I love that I get to teach mixed classes of mixed abilities, because then the students are also role modeling for each other. You never want to be the only role model in the room. You want the students to be learning from one another in terms of behavior, in terms of sense of humor, and appreciating idiosyncrasies and valuing different personalities.
Hearing Amanda talk about mixed abilities really made me reflect on my own time in her classroom. Monmouth has changed a lot. Today, the school serves a student body that's more than 50% Latino, and with that shift comes new dynamics around heritage, language, and belonging.
So we also have changed quite a bit demographically. Since you were a student, Leif, in the last maybe 10 years, we've jumped from like 30% Latino population to a little over 50. And in that group, we're having more students who speak more Spanish. And we also have students that come in like, oh, I should speak Spanish. I have a Hispanic last name. And so we're trying to work on language with helping kids of there's no should. There's your experience with language, and language is in your environment, and you took what you had the opportunity to be given. There's no blame for what you don't know. This is you as a human using words to communicate with other human beings at a very basic level that involves your soul, your mind, and your heart. And if you don't have passion in what you're doing, then you're connecting with people on just a surface level of the language from an academic perspective, and you have to dig deeper so that the kids feel that sense of identity and value the language more than the verbs and the basic grammar and the vocabulary you go through in class. And they slowly get that over time, but you have to help. So while Spanish is a language that's spoken in many cultures and countries, it can be vastly different. And the identity of such to each culture is very valuable and important. And that all needs to be recognized in the classroom.
Amanda believes in meeting students where they are, linguistically, culturally, and emotionally. But in the wake of the new administration, many students needed something more than just cultural affirmation. They needed protection. And that's when her school made a bold move.
So in the first 100 days, a message went out to students, and it really let the students know where the school stands. So something was made available, whether it's at the state level, I'm guessing the state level because it wouldn't have been the federal level, of a message to pass out to students that basically is you're safe, and you're safe here. And it even says, if you're a migrant, here are your rights. And we have advisory group, which is like a study hall. So we see those kids every day. And so we were given those to pass out to students in the first 100 days of his presidency. I've never seen anything like that. And I was very proud to do it. The two people that are in our upfront office, they have been instructed that if a strange adult is in the building, can't be identified, or if a student comes in and says strange adult in the building, can't be identified, they let administration know. Administration calls the district office, and the district office will come in likely with an attorney with them, just in case it's ICE. And so the slides say, hey, if you see any strange adults in this building, here are the two people you go to. Here's what they look like. And you tell the office right away. This is for staff and students. And then another message saying you are safe here. Those slides were shown again in Spanish and in English. So that was, you know, us saying, hey, you're safe. Nothing's going to happen to you, based on what we're here for. And the district is, you know, is going to be here for you. And here are the first adults you tell. We got to let admin know. And so you go to the office and you let someone know. But the fact that the message was given from the school level and communicated to the students on something that is very, very political, I was very impressed and proud, because I know that in any community, including ours, there would be people that would have been so mad that we had done that. And I'm glad we did it anyway.
As Amanda shared, not everyone in the community welcomed the school's message of protection, but it was a necessary stand. And in the years since, she's noticed how cultural and political expression among students has started to shift, quietly but noticeably.
Maybe it's just the students I have, but I've actually, so there's an, I see an uptick in shirts that have a big American flag on them, and an uptick in not hats that have like Trump's name on them or MAGA. I saw that more in the first administration. This time, it's simply hats that just say, like, proud to be American and freedom and flags. But there is a truck in our parking lot. It was one side is an American flag, which I love the American flag, and I hate that it's been taken over by certain groups and reused and misused. So I fear what this flag is intended for, because the other side of the truck has a flag that has the no tread on me, which over the years I had to look up because I didn't know what it was, and found out that it had some very innocent beginnings, but has been adopted by very far right groups. And that really concerns me, especially as we have more Latino students in the building than ever before. We did have, a year or two ago, we've had dress-up days, and one of our dress-up days was a flag day. And I'm just going to say that I'm so grateful that a fight didn't break out at some point, because we had a few students coming to school with different flags wrapped up in their flag to make a message. So, like, you'd have one student wrapped up in an American flag, and he'd wear it all day long. And then sometimes a Trump hat, sometimes just, you know, a freedom hat or something. Then you'd have another student wrapped in the Mexican flag and said, "This is me."
In that moment, it wasn't just about flags. It was about identity, pride, and tension, all playing out in the hallways of a rural high school. But for Amanda, the bigger picture is how rural communities like Monmouth navigate change, often with fewer resources and less support.
We're often the ones that are, especially without a sales tax and any sort of official funding that can actually stay at one level, we struggle to fund things. And we're often the ones getting like, okay, so it's existed on the East Coast for years. Let's try it. It's working. But we're never the one front runners trying it. So I try to sometimes gently let students know that when cool things happen in Oregon, whether it's knowledge, whether it's breaking a boundary, whether it's undoing a bias, that is a big deal, and you're putting us all on the map in a good way, because that's not part of the map we're normally on.
But identity politics aren't the only challenges Amanda's students face. Rural Oregon also carries the weight of economic hardship, something that plays out in classrooms every single day.
Oregon is already isolated, and then you get more isolated. Now, we, being close to I-5, it's not nearly as isolated as other parts of the state. So there's a lot of advantages we have. And part of those advantages absolutely is our diversity of people. And we have a range also socioeconomically. Oh my gosh, it's everything from literally, well, you know, we have students who are considered homeless, not because necessarily their family is out on a street, but homeless based on federal standards that says they don't have their own dwelling. They're living with someone else. They're renting a room from someone. Or the student could be homeless, like they've left their family and they're couch surfing. So there's other definitions of homeless that absolutely every high school has, and we have our share of that. And we have a liaison that works with kids, so when we find out they don't have a safe place, we can work with them to get a safe place to live. That's huge. And then we also are rare and unique in that, well, we have high school student group homes, and these are kids that had really challenging home lives, and they cannot go back. Their safety is not insured. But they're also old enough that we don't have enough foster homes. So rather than living with their own family as a foster until they age out of the system at 18, in Monmouth and Independence, we have multiple group homes that are just for teenagers. And so when there's an issue or you need an adult, the adults in the home are the ones that look out for those students. And that's rough because those students go home and they're not going home to a traditional home life, and they may only have once in a while visitation with their families. A new addition to this that I just recently learned about in the last couple of years is as we have students that sometimes for economic reasons, a family will send their son or daughter to the United States to get an education that they feel is better than what they have available to them. So if we have a student for Mexico, that's quite common, but they're not here with their family. And so what they'll do is they'll find an extended relative that will take them. So you find out more about the needs of your students and where they come from, and you become humbled really fast.
It's hard to hear these stories and not feel the weight of what some students go through just to make it to school. Amanda also made it clear there's another side to this, one that's rooted in pride, tradition, and joy.
So we have a cultural week now, and the end of the cultural week is the Mecha Club, which is Movimiento Estudiantil Chicano de Aztlán, which is recognizing the indigenous cultures of Mexico, and they take over the assembly on Friday. And so when we go to the assembly, the entire assembly is Mexican culture and dancing and mariachi music and so forth. So that's a new spin. And then throughout the week, we had a few students in the building that said, hey, I'm Pacific Islander. I'd be willing to put some slides together about what it's like to be Pacific Islander in Oregon. So identifying these little pockets of students that there aren't a lot of them that represent a culture, but letting them have value and feel like valued and feel like they have a place and affirmation. We're getting better at doing that, but we have a ways to go. We just do. You talk to like teachers that come into our district and to the high school and they say, oh, you have restorative justice. Or you have an equity team. That's so awesome. And I've heard a couple of their staff members from other bigger districts go, it's really cool that you guys have it, but you're several years behind where we were, you know, because they're in a bigger district. So being on the ground level in a small town, you are accustomed to the isolation that would be a little step, you know, in a suburb or a city. It's a big step for us because it just happened. So, yeah. So, like, we have our brand new class next year, which is a big deal for us. One of our Latino teachers is bringing a Latino studies class as an elective to the high school. And he just got his master's from University of Oregon in history. So he'll be teaching the class as what is it like to be Latino in Oregon? And what is the history and intersection of migrant workers in Oregon, and how do they help shape the history of our community and our identity? Super exciting that we even have that class because it's affirming the identity of a little over 50% of our students.
That new class isn't just a win for representation. It's a signal that the school is listening. And for Amanda, it's just one step in the ongoing work of resilience, reflection, and reimagining what a community can be.
I think of resilience as bouncing back. Handle this situation and then go into this situation and then, you know, adjust, modify, accommodate to handle this situation and the task at hand. Then as a community, I feel like you can't bounce back if you don't open your ears and listen to what other people have to say. And even if what they have to say is hurtful and hateful, you've learned something and now you know where to start the conversation. So resiliency. I'm learning what conversations now we need to have, right? And I'm also needing to be on the recipient end of those conversations. I still have my own level of education that needs to happen, but that bouncing back from one environment to another, you got to keep your ears open and your mind open, and you have to listen. And then you can have some serious dialogue and conversation, even if what you're allowing to happen is you're letting someone open up and say ridiculous things. I feel like if you let that conversation continue and you push back, but you can find a way to push back to where you're still in dialogue and not yelling, now that person has heard you. Doesn't mean they're going to take it to heart, but now, or you give an anecdote and a situation that says, hey, maybe what you're believing isn't true.
Sometimes that willingness to stay in dialogue, to really listen, can lead to moments you never forget. Amanda told us one last story that perfectly captures just how complicated and hopeful this work can be.
I had a student in class a few years ago, and he had a Trump hat, and he was this and that. And in class one day, he brought up his dad, and his dad had abandoned the family. And he said, we don't even know where my dad is. He's probably on drugs. He's such a whatever. And you could tell how angry he was. And I just went over and I said, you know, we're glad you're here with us. Well, he and I already had a relationship before he even came to Spanish because he was making racist comments in the hall. And I had to pull him aside and talk to him about it. Well, then his mom decided the school was too woke and she pulled him out for a while. And he told us that. He's like, I can't come here anymore. The topics that are talked about, you know, I'm not allowed to talk about that stuff. And then the good news is, like, a year later, he came back and he walked down the hall and he even said hi to me. And he goes, hi, Miss Leister. And I was like, oh, you're back. He goes, yeah, I'm back. I'm going to graduate from Central. And I didn't even bring up, because he didn't know that I knew why he left, and he didn't know that I knew the comments his mom had made. And that, you know, just the environment he was raised in. But he is hope. So those kids, even if they have it at home, they're hope too, because they are in a building where they're being told that that is not okay. And maybe as they become adults, that message will stay. And maybe they'll continue to keep listening, and maybe it'll reach their hearts. And when it reaches their hearts, they're going to start saying smarter things. So we'll hope. So I was really proud that he came back. and really proud that he was excited to say hi to his teachers, even if we're, you know, progressive idiots.
This is Leif Olson and
Christina Path
for the University of Oregon. Thanks for listening.
That's it for this episode of the Listener's Podcast, Oregon Speaks. Thanks so much for listening and for making space for these voices. This season of Listeners is produced by graduate students in the Community Voices course at the University of Oregon School of Journalism and Communication. If you appreciated what you heard, we'd love for you to share it with someone in your own community. And if this kind of community-based storytelling speaks to you, if you're curious about how to create podcasts that builds trust and sparks dialogue, we've got something for you. The University of Oregon now offers a community podcasting micro-credential, a flexible, hands-on program designed for anyone looking to amplify local voices through audio storytelling. Whether you're new to podcasting or looking to take your work further, this might be the next step. You can learn more about this program with a link in our show notes. We'll be back soon with another episode. Until then, keep on listening.